I believe solar not just like provide us green energy, but also provide us a green economy growth. It's a new engine for economic growth.
Welcome everyone to 100 Climate Conversations, and thank you for joining us. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the ancestral homelands on which we meet today, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We respect their elders, past, present, and future, and recognise their continuous connection to country. Today is number 91 of 100 conversations happening every Friday. The series presents 100 visionary Australians that are taking positive action to respond to the most critical issue of our time, which is climate change. We are recording live today in the Boiler House of the Powerhouse Museum. Before it was home to the museum, it was the Ultimo Power Station. Built in 1899, it supplied coal-powered electricity to Sydney's tram system into the 60s. In the context of this architectural artefact, we shift our focus forward to the innovations of the net zero revolution. My name is Paddy Manning. I'm a journalist and author of half a dozen books, including a book on climate change, Body Count, How Climate Change is Killing Us. And now if I could introduce Dr. Zheng Rongshe, is a pioneering energy scientist and entrepreneur. In 2000, Xie founded SunTech Power, a groundbreaking solar panel manufacturer, and has since founded SunMan Energy, helping to deliver the future of solar. As an academic, Dr. Xie has published more than 100 papers and is the owner of 80 patents. Dr. Xie's work in photovoltaic technology has transformed the solar industry and accelerated the global transition to cleaner energy sources. We are so thrilled to have him join us today. Please join me in welcoming Zheng Rongshe.
Thank you, Paddy.
Zheng Rongshe, you were born in 1963 on Yangzhong, an island in the Yangtze River not far from Shanghai. You grew up through China's Cultural Revolution. You excelled at school and were enrolled to study science in Changchun University in northeast China in 1979, graduated in 1983, and completed a master's in laser physics at the Shanghai Institute of Optics and Fine Mechanics in 1986. Can you tell us about your upbringing and what drove your interest in science?
In my time, it's really because I was born in 1963, as you said. And at that time, you know, China actually went through the very difficult time, you know, like there's 3 years natural disasters. There was no food. People really struggled to survive. So I was lucky I survived. And also we went to school, and as you know, there was a Cultural Revolution. The university enrollment is really resumed from 1977. So before that, people like me, we couldn't go to university. So it's, again, it's very lucky, you know, for me to actually get into university in 1979, only 3 years, you know, after the reopening of the university door to young people like us. So, of course, you know, I was always very fascinated, you know, with chemistry and physics. So also very lucky I got to study in the university to learn optics. Optics is about light. Without light, we cannot see the world. And you know, that's how I started my career in a science and engineering background.
Okay, that's interesting. Can I ask, were you talking and thinking about clean energy and about carbon pollution reduction at that time in China?
Okay, actually, the first time when I heard greenhouse gas effect was 1983. Okay, when I was studying my master's degree in the university, and we had an English teacher from America. So at the time, you know, the Douglas, okay, the guy's name was Douglas. He started to talk about greenhouse gas effect and the global warming. So at the time, we don't talk about climate change. We talk about global warming due to greenhouse gas effect.
You headed to Australia in 1988. Mm-hmm. I think you said in one interview that you couldn't have found Australia on a map if you were asked.
Yeah.
But you were soon studying for a PhD at the world-renowned School of Photovoltaic and Renewable Energy Engineering at the University of New South Wales. Your mentor and PhD supervisor at New South Wales Uni was Professor Martin Green.
Yeah.
His research group has developed technology that's featured in over 90% of the world's solar voltaics. Martin has recalled your work with him all started when you knocked on his door. He said that the global price drop in solar would not have happened without you. How did you come together? Did you know about Dr. Green before you accepted the invite from New South Wales Uni?
Yeah, when I applied for admission in the University of New South Wales, I didn't know there was a photovoltaic research program in the university. So I actually applied for work in School of Physics, okay, with Professor Michael Gale, you know, use laser physics to characterize this interaction of laser and materials. And then my sponsorship, I only got 1 year sponsorship to work with Professor Mark Gale. And of course, I wanted to continue my study here and doing my research, but there was no scholarship, okay, no funding to continue my work there. And I had to worry about either go back to China or I found a new sponsorship here, right, to continue my work. So people around me told me, oh, you should talk to Professor Martin Green, yeah, you know, from the School of Electrical Engineering, okay? He's a very rich group, got a lot of research fund, you know, from America, from federal government. So that's why I went to see Martin, you know, that was, I think, a Tuesday afternoon around 5 p.m. I knocked at his door. And he showed up, you know, tall and handsome professor, as he can imagine. And I just asked him, you know, can I get a job here? Okay. Martin's initial answer was, oh, sorry, we don't have a job, you know. And I didn't give up. You know, I continue on. I don't mean I want a full-time job. You know, I just want some research opportunity and so on. So then he invited me to his office. Now, please come in, you know. So second day, he gave me an offer letter, yes, you know, to work in his group as a research assistant. Yeah. That moment, you know, that knocking of the door is the moment for me to enter the photovoltaic area.
What were you hoping to achieve in photovoltaics? What was your research aimed at doing?
Okay. When I joined Professor Martin Green's group, that was 1989. So Martin's group was already very famous, you know, making very high efficiency crystalline silicon solar cells. But at the same time, the whole research community also realized making solar cell at the time is so expensive. And if we cannot get the cost down enough, then it still is a dream, right? Solar is good. We've got enough sunshine, which can generate electricity, but not cheap enough. So the reason for that, because the silicon wafer, crystalline silicon wafer, or the same material people, you know, we use to making chips, like a semiconductor, microelectronics, same material is very, very expensive. So there are many ways of reducing this cost. And Professor Green really believed crystalline silicon is the answer. So if we can, instead of using other materials, we focus on crystalline silicon material, but make it thinner. So then he, you know, applied for several million dollars, some funding from Australia and some even from US, to actually try to make this thin crystalline silicon film on glass. So that was a concept. At that moment, I knocked at his door. You know, I joined the laboratory, started my PhD work. You know, so just try to grow crystalline silicon thin film on glass. That was my PhD work. And it took me 2.5 years to complete my work. And I was very happy because I worked so hard day and night, okay, 7 days, because I had to pay very high tuition fee, $15,000 a year.
Yeah.
So I think I better get it done quickly. So that's how I did it, you know, and in 2.5 years. And also, I was very lucky, you know, I used a way, you know, probably a lot of people, you know, never thought about it, to grow this crystalline silicon on glass, you know. And I remember, because when you grow crystal on glass, that's at the high temperature, like a temperature over 600 degrees C. We only can imagine how this crystal formed and grew, right? We cannot see it. So I have to try to understand how this process happened. So you know what I did? I used salt,
Salt.
Yeah, salt.
Ordinary salt.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
I remember one weekend I just went to supermarket to get a bag of salt and a piece of glass. I boiled it with water. Once it's super saturated, I, you know, insert a piece of glass in the solution, and on the microscope, I actually can see how crystal were growing. Okay.
So that's in boiling water.
In boiling water. So that's how I did it.
What did the OCH health and safety people have to say about that?
Well, salt is okay, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a weekend. Nobody knows what I did.
So. And did that result in one of your 90 patents?
Yeah, I think I filed 20 patents.
Out of that?
Yes.
What was exciting then about that thin film solar? How did it change the game for solar cells?
Yes. As I said earlier, the idea was to reduce the usage of crystal, of silicon.
Yeah.
For a piece of wafer, the thickness at the time was around 0.4 millimeter thick. For thin film, our intention was to produce like 10 microns thick. You can imagine, 0.4, 10 microns is like 400 times, thinner.
Yep.
So that's how we try to reduce the cost. And later on, I think in 1995, Martin and Stuart Windham, they were able to get the $45 million funding from Pacific Power. So then we started a company called Pacific Solar, try to commercialize this technology with the goal of making solar panel with a cost of less than $1 per watt. So that was 1995. So I was very lucky, and Martin appointed me as a chief technical officer. So I was like only 30 years old, very young, and managed a group, a PhD, 50 people, coming all around the world.
Let's keep that $1 per watt as a point of reference. That was your ambition in 1995.
Yes.
What was the current prevailing cost of solar at that time?
That was $5 per watt.
$5.
Yes.
And you were aiming for $1, and it's now 20 cents.
Yes.
Okay. So you get persuaded in 2000. You're an Australian citizen, but you're persuaded by the province of Wuxi in China to set up solar manufacturing there. Within 5 years... And actually, Martin Green told us that he was very skeptical that you would succeed in your dream of manufacturing solar cells in China.
Yeah.
But you persevered. Within 5 years, the company you founded, SunTech, was listed on the New York Stock Exchange, the first privately owned Chinese company to do that. And you, at one point, are China's richest man, known around the world as the first green billionaire. How did that take off? Can you just talk us through that incredible experience?
Definitely, that was a very risky choice at the time.
But to go to China?
Yes.
Yeah.
But somehow, maybe in my blood, I have kind of a personality, continuous tranquil life won't excite me that much. Okay. So I love challenge, So at the time, there was some friend talked to me, hey, you know so much about solar. Why don't you come to China to start some business? I didn't believe myself. Come on. There was no capital, right? It's nothing there.
There was no solar manufacturing
There was some solar manufacturing, but altogether, there was four, solar manufacturers, and each with like a 500 kilowatt capacity. There was no market, especially for those four manufacturers, and mainly focus on domestic market, okay? But for me, I know, okay, there was market in Germany at the time and also Japan. And I didn't think about, really doing business very seriously. But when people talked to me for a couple of times, then I started a little bit agitated, So, maybe I should think about it, right? And I spent a week to write a 200-page business plan myself. I didn't know the format. Okay, I have to
invent it.
I have to, go to computer to find out what is a template of a business plan. So the chapter 1, 2, 3, and then there was a section financial analysis. Okay, that's when you need to give estimation about the cost of a solar panel, right? I didn't have a clue, you know, the price of wafer or price of acid, chemicals, but I knew the price of materials I bought in the laboratory, right? But that's small quantity. And I give you a 30% discount. That's the number I use to try to calculate the final cost of a solar module I'm going to make. I remember in a business plan, if I can sell a solar module at $3 per watt back in 2001, I can make 25% gross margin. So that was a number really came from my head, okay? There's no substance to support except the number from laboratory. You know what? When I started sell the modules from 2003 and 2004, the price was $3 a watt and $2.8 per watt. The gross margin was 25%.
You got the numbers right.
So that's exactly right, okay? But anyhow, I think it was difficult to start business in China at the time. Usually, for somebody to start a business, you need a few elements. For example, you need a market, okay? You need a capital. You need a technology. You need a talent. And I got nothing. You know, it took me a year to raise $6 million, really supported by Wuxi government. So that's how I started. But I spent it all for the first production line. And only 10 megawatt. I bought equipment from Germany, from Japan, US. Also, I spent $1 million to establish the research laboratory, which is very important. That's at the time, that laboratory probably the best in China. Then it took me 1.5 years to actually build the factory. And the speed is really Suntech speed. So afterwards, and you know, I promised the board we're going to make get efficiency over 15% of multi-crystalline silicon solar cell. I achieved it within 3 months after the factory was operational.
The cells you were making in Suntech were using the technology developed at New South Wales University. So you're achieving 15% in a manufacturing line in China. What was the theoretical efficiency of the cells at that time?
Okay, theoretical efficiency of crystalline silicon is like 29.4%. At the time, the University of New South Wales, you know, Martin's group already achieved 25%. So it's like, you know, what we achieved 15% is of commercial larger scale production. So that's already like a leading efficiency, you know, commercial.
Best in the world at that time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What did that plant, that Suntech manufacturing capacity, how did it change the solar industry?
That's actually, you know, play a very critical role at the time. Due to the success of Suntech, especially 2005, we went public in New York Stock Exchange. Share price went up the first day 41%. Okay, then as you said, I become billionaire, you know, the richest man in China. But it's very interesting. For society, people, they focus on your fortune story. And many people say, oh, look at this guy, you know. Overnight, he became a billionaire, right? But people, they didn't really think it took me 15 years to get here, right? So yes. It's all the deposits, you know, all the hard work. But anyhow, what I did has a huge social impact, you know, on many ambitious business people, entrepreneurs. So at the time, you know, in China, because business is booming, people were working very hard and excited and always zoom and looking for new opportunities. Then all of a sudden, this guy, young student from Australia, he become billionaire like in 5 years. What he's doing? We better take a look. So this actually arose a group of people entering the industry.
So copying you.
Yeah, you can say copy or I think at the time, because there was no supply chain, everything has to be imported. Equipment, material, nothing in China. So I remember for glass, solar glass, I had to talk to Pilkington in Waterloo, next to Redfern.
Yes.
There's a factory here, and I had to talk to Bill Gross. So actually, I signed 5-year contract with him because...
To get glass from
Sydney. Yeah, glass from Sydney, you know. Pilkington in Waterloo was the only solar glass manufacturer globally. So we didn't have glass supply. I came here to talk to him and many others, like wafers and like silver paste. everything from overseas. So at the time, I started to try to help to build up the local supplies. Because I have limited capital, I have limited time, but I have experience, I have network. So I tried to convince many people. I think from 2001 to 2006, every year, I organize a week seminar talking about solar.
In China?
In China, in Wuxi. Whoever is interested in solar, come over. Because
all right.
I give lectures myself, and also I invited some other engineers like Stuart Winham. You know, he got involved very early, like 2003. He was a professor. He's very good at teaching, you know.
Yeah. Stuart Winham works with Martin Green. Yeah, at New South Wales.
Yeah, at the time.
That's
yes.
Right, yeah.
So he, like later on, 2005, he became the CTO of Suntech. And because of my, you know.
Chief Technology Officer.
Yes. Because of my encouragement and many business people that came, I did it continuously for 5 years. And many of them become billionaires now, okay? They own a big company, public companies.
So Ying Li.
Ying Li and Amanda, you know.
They're all big solar manufacturers now.
They're all big solar manufacturers, you know.
Yeah.
So they're public company, you know.
Yeah.
So with market cap probably over $20 billion,
yeah.
you know, or more.
Yeah.
So I did that. And also after Suntech went public, there were another 10 Chinese company went to Wall Street.
Yeah.
Okay, raised hundreds of millions of dollars. And this is a foundation. So supply chain is so important. And you can imagine when I started, there was nothing in China. But now in Wuxi, everything within 2 hours drive.
It's still there.
They will deliver.
All right. So now we talk about the painful bit. What went wrong? Why did Suntech go broke?
So at the time, because there was a high expectation from all around you, right?
You're the leader.
Yes, including myself. And we supported this ecosystem establishment, you know, in a great way, not just like technically, but also financially. And at the same time, the investors also expect us, you know, to grow fast. So, for example, 2009, we already reached 2 gigawatts, you know, solar cell
capacity.
Yeah, module production. And we also devoted huge effort in develop the new technology, for example, Pluto technology. You actually, we install 1 megawatt Pluto modules on Sydney Theatre Company.
You know,
the building.
Oh, yeah, with Kate
building
Blanchett,
on the
road.
Yeah, Kate Blanchett.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I've seen those photos.
Yeah. So actually, you know, I devoted that, the panels to the house. So all this technology, you know, was developed together with University of New South Wales. And we use copper instead of silver. And the efficiency went up to like 22% at the time. And that's also the precursor of PERC technology, which now is commercially available globally.
What does that stand for again?
PERC is a passive emitter.
Passive emitter?
Yeah, passive emitter and a real contact solar cell, which was invented in like early 1990s by Professor Martin Green. He won many awards.
For that?
Yeah, for that. But Suntech at that time, like 2007, we started to develop this technology. Not only the technology, the process itself, but also the tools, equipment. Because now people use laser process to make a PERC working. But the company who supply 80% of the industry was a company we helped, we supported back in 2007. So that sort of tell you, you know, how important the work we did. But unfortunately, the copper plating, which we started and commercialized, the technology got lost after me. So now the industry, you know, had to redevelop this copper plating process because silver is getting more and more expensive. Silver is a rare metal anyway. So copper will be much cheaper, you know, more wealthy than silver in supply. Yeah.
And is that related to the collapse of Suntech? Or?
Yes. It's because Suntech was bought by another owner, right? And the new owner was not technically minded as much as I did, you know. So I don't know. Then I even asked a question, where are all these tools? 2 gigawatts of tools, copper plating tools. If somebody, you know, bought one or two, right? So at least the industry does not need to start from scratch.
Oh, because the picture I had was you had anti-dumping actions in America and...
That definitely didn't help.
The financial crisis.
That didn't help at all.
No. So you've got all of these factors coming together.
Yeah. So when you are lucky, everything comes for you. When you are unlucky, everything comes against you. That's the life is. For me, I'm kind of person, mostly I look forward. I don't see my success or glory time in the back so much.
So 6 months after SunTech goes bankrupt, you set up Sunman. Was it a totally different technology that you were promoting with Sunman, or what was the vision behind Sunman?
At the time, you know, I mean, there were so many opportunities. You know, many people ask me, hey, you can start another SunTech, right? With your network and experience, you can grow a company to like a billions of sales again. But I didn't want to do it because I repeated what I did. And then I thought about it and what's next for solar. And I remember 2010, I attended Energy Summit in Germany. Okay, I was on a stage with the chairman of Share, you know, the energy company Share.
Yes.
And we debate about the future of energy. He's talking about conventional oil, coal, gas. I'm talking about renewable, right? And eventually, you know, the chairman of Share asked me two questions. Hey, Dr. Xi, okay, you believe you can rely on solar. Solar can provide all the energy we need. And you have to answer me two questions. In Europe, unlike China or America, we don't have, you know, big piece of vacant land or desert. So we only have buildings, you know, very crowded, you know, high density of population. How can we install solar, okay, on all surfaces, okay, building surface, you know, walls and so on? That's one question. Second question, do you think you can supply enough? At the time, I was amazed. I said, yes, all good questions, right? And I mean, can we supply enough? Today, we realize we cannot supply enough, you know, solar. So I think, you know, Sunman is actually came from the question, first question, how can we install solar on all surfaces? And imagine with a bulky glass, so heavy, right? We'll be all like this window, like a high-rise building, the window. You know, put this piece of glass on all surfaces is no easy job. So that's why I have been thinking, is there any other alternative? So I thought about it, okay, can we get like a thin film-like product?
Back to your research.
Exactly. So that's very light, right? You know,
and I've got one
right
here. Flexible,
yes. So
just for the microphones, I'm holding a flexible Sunman panel. It's about a foot square and it's bendable.
Yes, it's bendable.
And it's very lightweight. Can you explain?
Yeah, so
what is the innovation?
So normally for conventional panels or like solar panels, my first company, SunTech, you know, is still making. Is actually the encapsulation material on the front is a piece of glass, like made by a company like a Pilkington. But with that, the panel is very heavy. And especially now the panel get bigger and bigger. 2 square meter, you know, panel will weigh about 25 to 30 kilogram. So it's fairly heavy. So when you carry this 30 kilogram panel to your rooftop or to, you know, mounting on the facade, is not an easy job. Also, insulation costs will be very high. But to cover all surfaces with solar panel, we have to use some other product. So that's the whole, you know, invention came from.
Yeah.
And the invention basically, can I make a thin film like a solar panel, but without using other materials? I still want to use silicon, which is already proven technology, proven product, and you know, with like high efficiency, low cost, and reliable. But all we need to do is replace glass with some polymer material, such as the polymer material we use in aircraft. Okay, people sometimes worry about the durability and our stability of polymer composite. But if you imagine the airplane will fly, okay, they fly for like 20, 30 years in such a harsh environment. Okay,
yeah.
So polymer composite material is very durable and stable. So,
but not translucent normally.
Yeah, that's a challenge, you know. But we need to find the composition you know, which provide the transparency, insulation, okay, and also like thermal expansion coefficient match with silicon and so on. But it's doable based on that. So,
in fact, you've done it.
Yes, we started from early. The company was incorporated in like October 2014, but we actually started the research work from January 2015. It took us like almost 3 years for material product development certification. That's why the first time I remember probably the end of 2017, we actually launched the first product in Botany Garden in Sydney. So
okay, I'll go and have a look. I didn't know that. And you've patented that? You call it the EARC panel, don't
EARC
you?
EARC means enable architecture.
Enable architecture.
Yes.
Okay.
Of
That's
solar.
What it stands for.
Yes.
How do they compare in efficiency to glass panels?
Same efficiency.
Same?
Yes. Because we use the same solar cell technology.
They can be used off-grid. I've seen
of
one
course.
Video where you're talking about enlarging the pie. Or enlarging the cake. You don't want to cut of the cake for solar. You want to enlarge the cake.
Yeah.
Well, grow the pie.
Yeah, grow the pie because we do not compete with the, you know, conventional glass panels. We, for example, at the moment, many people want to install solar, including Australia National Maritime Museum. They wanted to install solar panel like back in 2015. But because the roof issues cannot handle the weight, they don't want any penetration or routing installation. So for us, we just bond it on the surface.
Glue it.
Yeah, glue it. So
you don't have to drill into the roof. There's no leaking.
No. So especially, you know, many roofs with like a waterproof membrane, you know, they don't want any drilling. And also 40% of commercial and industrial rooftop, they've got a weight issue. They structurally cannot handle the weight. For our panel, it only weighs like 3 kilograms per square meter. Like glass panel weighs 15 kilograms per square meter. So you tell the difference. But again, innovation is not easy. We launched the product in, you know, 2017, but took us like another 5 years to really educate and grow the market. So now accumulatively, we already install over 500 megawatts of this solar panel globally.
And if you take the glass out, does that help you answer the challenge from the chairman of Shell?
Yes.
Like, can you supply the quantity?
You can imagine, very easy. Just like brush some glue, you can stick on the wall. As simple as that, yeah.
There's a train running on these cells now. Can you tell us about that? The world's first solar train?
Yeah, Byron Bay. And I think, of course, it's a historical train, you know, for tourists, for education. So what we, you know, decided to work together is use solar. You know, we stick this solar panel on the roof of train to partially power the train. So it's a very good education purpose.
What other uses could these cells have that, for example, I think I've seen you in some interviews talk about integrating them with roofing materials? Or
yeah, you can integrate this with collarbone, you know, steel.
Metal. With the curves?
Yeah, yes.
With all that. The corrugations?
Yes. And you can integrate this with a thermal panel.
Are you talking to BlueScope about that?
We have been working together for a while. Yes.
A solar?
Collarbone.
Coro.
Yes.
Right. Cool. These cells, where are they made? Is it in China?
At this moment, they're made in a place, you know, close to Shanghai. And also, we are building a factory in Indiana, you know, the United States.
Have you invented some new numbers in a new business plan? How big is this going to get?
As I said, 40% of a commercial rooftop got a structure issue.
40%
of commercial rooftop.
Rooftops.
Yeah, factories rooftop, you know, and they got a structure issue. So they cannot handle the weight. You either need to spend a lot of money to strengthen the mechanical support for glass panel, or you can simply use, you know, EARC, some man's lightweight panel to directly put on your roof. You can save a lot of cost and labor.
So what's just big picture? Mm-hmm. Are you going to raise hundreds of millions of dollars again, or how much are you investing in this?
Yeah, we already, you know, over $100 million investment. And, you know, this year our revenue will be over $100 million US. So in the last 3 years, the revenue has been double every year. So we see the snowball, you know, getting bigger again. So that's how innovation happens. And you initially have an idea, then you start to research, you get a prototype product, then you go to market to educate people. it's a pain process. You have to be patient. And then, like, once people start to accept the product and work with them and accept the product, and more people will come to you, it's like a snowball. You're getting bigger and bigger. Yeah. This will be an important part of solar industry in the future. I envision within the next 3 to 5 years, the innovation for solar is not necessary at like efficiency. Efficiency, we already got 26%. Theoretical efficiency is 29.4%. Now the industry production is already over 25%. Right, you only have a little gap. But more importantly, how we deploy solar fast. We cannot supply it enough. We cannot install the solar fast enough. The reason for that, because especially, for example, in Australia, Australia wants to become a hydrogen superpower. We have to use green energy to decompose water to generate hydrogen, not coal, not the natural gas, right? So we need more solar. So that means we have to have huge capacity to make enough solar panels and to install enough solar panels fast enough.
Okay, so do you think it could be bigger than SunTech?
Anything's possible.
Will you make these cells in Australia potentially?
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
Just talking globally, how do you see solar fitting into the renewables landscape? Do you think that there's just effectively unlimited growth potential? Do you think that...
I think in the next 30 to 40 years, it's unlimited. Because we're talking solar to solar, in Australia, actually, there's a project from sand to solar. We've got enough of coal sand. Because, you know, like silicon is the second most abundant element on the Earth's crust. Australia got so many quartz mine, SiO2. In Australia, we can turn this SiO2 into, you know, silicon. Then you can imagine the whole supply chain. Okay, silicon, then quartz, silicon, then silicon wafer, cells, modules, and solar plant. Then hydrogen. You use hydrogen store, but hydrogen, if really, you know, come to that way, Australia can be we have, you know, so much minerals, right? We can start to refine minerals, use hydrogen locally. We can have a refinement industry here, but green refinement. We can use hydrogen, not use carbon, as this moment the industry has been used carbon. So imagine that Australia could be a green manufacturing superpower.
That's the Ross Garnaut vision, isn't it? that we use renewable energy, cheap renewable energy, to revive manufacturing here.
But can be achieved. So this should be a top-down strategy. This should be a national strategy. People in camera should really visualize this. I believe they do. But realize this, you know, that's very important.
You are currently living and working between Australia and China. How does it compare the two countries in the way they're using solar?
I think it's very common, you know, both China and Australia, they very much see, you know, solar is really the future of energy. China is not only deploy solar, China has been the largest solar market in the last 5-6 years. You know, this year, 2023, China is going to install over 100 gigawatt. You know,
100 gigawatts.
Yeah. And in the first 6 months, it's already over 60 gigawatt. So I think Australia now, because Australia, of course, you know, consumption of electricity is much smaller. I think in the last few years, it's around 5 to 6 gigawatt per year. Kilowatt per head, I think, is also, you know, is a leading country in the world. But of course, China will continue to deploy renewable energy, for example, EV cars, right? In Shanghai, 50% of vehicle is electric.
Now, already, on the road.
Yes. Right. If you stand in the highway, you cannot hear much of noise. So I think it's already happening. And I believe Australia, you know, is also, I can already see the acceleration of EV deployment here. But again, as, you know, we believe Australia will become hydrogen superpower, we need more solar panels. You know, we need a local manufacturers. So the whole supply chain, I believe, solar not just like provide us green energy, but also provide us a green economy growth. It's a new engine for economy growth. It's like IT, 15, 20 years ago. IT was like a new engine, right?
Yes.
To fuel a new round of growth. But now solar and renewable energy, you know, is doing that this moment.
Do you think we can export renewables?
Of course. And we can export hydrogen, for example. We can become local manufacturer, local like a mineral refinement using hydrogen.
Because that's always been the criticism, hasn't it? We're such an important fossil fuel exporter, coal and gas. But how do we replace that export income if we switch to renewables?
Yes. And if so we use solar.
It's unproven.
Yeah, we use solar to desalinate the seawater, right? Then Australia, like we'll not have a problem with water shortage. We can absorb more people here to live.
That brings me to one of the last questions I have here. Mentorship has played a strong role in your career, establishing a new solar industry in China, for example. Today, you're passionate about teaching and sharing your knowledge with others. What's the importance of having mentor figures in science?
It's very important in my life. Like Professor Green, you know, has been my mentor. And especially as a professor, he gave me a direction. Thin film, crystalline silicon thin film. Then I have freedom to explore the possibilities. And also, I like, Martin's style, because if you want to mentor the next generation, you've got to give them guidance. At the same time, give them freedom, you know, and a responsibility. So that's very important. That's also what I, you know, try to do. For example, I supervise 15 students this moment, okay, in the university. And because I have quite a few companies, right, they have very good research platform, you know, laboratories compared to university these days, you know, they're much advanced. So I encourage my students, okay, you got to work in a company, the real projects. And of course, once you have to use computer to do simulation, you can do it in the university. It's a combination of theory and practice. So I think to train students in that way is very important. It's like sort of a pre-employment, sort of engagement of employment of students, you know, in the real world, where train them the right skill for their future career.
Dr. Sher, thank you very much. Could you please join me in a round of applause?
Thank you.
To follow the program online, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcast or go to 100climateconversations.com. Records of these conversations will form a new climate change archive preserved for future generations in the powerhouse collection of over 500,000 objects that tell the stories of our time. See more from the museum at Powerhouse on Twitter and at the Powerhouse Museum on Instagram and Facebook.